ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
G'day, Dr. Carl here. Back in 1986, I could not wait to see teacher Krista McAuliffe on the Space Shuttle Challenger launch into space.
Roger, Challenger. Obviously a major malfunction.
We could not believe what we were seeing. The Challenger Legacy. To hear more, search for Science Friction and look out for The Challenger Legacy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Listen app.
Now, I'm a bit worried, Jerry. This week, I've lost you to the internet, the deep, dark corners of it, for many hours. What have you been looking for?
Yes, I've been searching, trying to find out what is happening in China after the purging of a top general by Xi Jinping. And you know what? I'm still not convinced I know what is underway.
So hopefully, on this episode, some answers to what on earth is happening in China. I'm Hamish McDonald.
And I'm Geraldine Doogue. Welcome to our China edition of Global Roaming.
So did you find anything in the corners of the internet, Geraldine? Because there's some pretty wild stuff out there, a lot of theories, some of them making it onto the front pages of some of the world's most respected newspapers as well.
Yes, General Zhang Yuxia is a pretty big deal, very much from that princeling, the sort of the elite of the elites in China, you know, frankly, a mate of Xi Jinping's from a very young age. And he was purged and nobody quite knows why. He's been in charge of acquisitions, military acquisitions, which certainly opens him up to corruption. But the Wall Street Journal, you know, which is sort of someone to take note of, actually had the story that General Zhang had purged China's nuclear secrets to the US. That's just one of the theories. I might add that's been pretty much rebutted by other people who say, look, if that were true, that would mean the CIA and the Americans were just riddled throughout China, you know, completely embedded.
So the official line is this. His name is General Zhang Yuxia. He's the vice chairman of the Central Military Commission of the People's Liberation Army, and he is formally under investigation accused of violations of discipline and law. Now, as you mentioned, reports in the Wall Street Journal have suggested leaking nuclear secrets. I read a piece from Stephen McDonnell, the former ABC Beijing correspondent, now with the BBC, very respected China watcher. His piece included, you know, rumours of a possible gunfight on the streets of Beijing. There is so much kind of palace intrigue going on here. And then others that say, look, you've got to almost ignore all of this speculation. You can only work with what is public. And I guess the sum total of what is public is kind of unsatisfying in terms of trying to understand something that's happening at this level, but maybe important for listeners to know that of this committee of seven, there's now only two left, including Xi Jinping.
I suppose the question is, was there anything like an attempted coup or semi-coup? That is what you have to ask.
But asking it without any likelihood of an answer, I think, is the reality.
Oh, no likelihood of an answer. And there's, look, in all, you know, like Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister, landed there right in the middle of it to basically set up a trade deal between the UK and China. So, I mean, listeners will be thinking, I'm going to see pictures of that and it's going to look absolutely just like normal China. And maybe it is. Maybe it's not. And these things, particularly in autocratic regimes, but particularly in China, where you only know about things in retrospect, I just think we've got to keep our eyes open, which is what we're hoping we're bringing you.
Yeah. So a lot of the really respected China watchers that I tend to read in moments like this seem to be saying that this demonstrates the strength of Xi Jinping's power. I know you're not convinced of that at this point, Geraldine. So we're going to try and unravel that a little bit during this episode. We're really pleased to welcome back to Global Roaming Neil Thomas. He's a fellow on Chinese politics at the Asia Society. We've actually pulled him out of a gala party in Washington, D.C. And so we're very grateful to Neil for stepping out and hopefully giving us some answers.
Neil Thomas, welcome to Global Roaming.
Thanks for having me.
Look, what do you judge to be underway now in China? And I suppose the key question is, Xi Jinping still in full control of his country? I think it's a reasonable question to ask. How would you answer it?
I would say that absolutely Xi Jinping is in control of the Communist Party. The fact that a civilian leader can topple the country's top general on the back of purging almost all of the other members of the Central Military Commission in China, which is something that his predecessors absolutely could not even get close to, shows that she is very much in control. And this is a sign of his strength rather than his weakness, and suggests that he's going to keep ruling China after the next party congress in late 2027, which is a half-decade leadership transition. So I think for him, this is a political victory, even if it'll have, you know, broader ramifications for the fear that he generates across the system. For an authoritarian leader, that can be a good thing.
Can you explain the mechanics, Neil, that you're talking about there that demonstrates strength? The fact that he's been able to do this, why others couldn't? What does it tell us about his grip on power?
As an authoritarian leader, Xi does not, you know, contest elections, right? He contests a, you know, contest of will and resources with the other people who are swimming around this elite part of the Communist Party. And being able to purge someone, to investigate them for corruption, which almost 100% of the time leads to a expulsion from the party, often a criminal conviction, spending the rest of your time at the Qincheng prison on the outskirts of Beijing, that's the ultimate power play in this system. And so being able to do that repeatedly to general after general, if he wasn't powerful, it'd be the other way around. It'd be him getting in trouble and the military making moves against the civilian bureaucracy. But instead, it's Xi who's still on top.
What do you judge happened? Was it an unusually quick purge or not?
The best answer to this question is that we don't really know. The actual reasons, the actual feelings that Xi has towards his top generals, his top lieutenants in the party, are basically a mystery to us, which feeds a lot of misinformation and disinformation online. There's a ton of colorful rumors out there about a coup in Beijing, or maybe Zhang Youxia was plotting with Xi Jinping's wife to do something. We just don't know. I mean, I think those more fanciful stories are almost certainly false, but it does seem that Xi has very high expectations of his lieutenants. He's been using anti-corruption since he came to power in 2012 as first a way to get rid of his obvious political rivals and, you know, different factions who could have contested his leadership. But he's now uncontestably the number one. And he's been that way for a few years. And I think what we're seeing now is actually a more serious effort that's been ongoing since that time by Xi to clean up the party. This is a guy who was born into the communist elite. His whole life has revolved around the intrigues of elite politics. So this is what gives his life meaning. I think he's a true believer in China's mission, to the party's mission, to become a rejuvenated country, great power in the world. And he sees corruption as being what brought down the Soviet Communist Party, or brought down previous Chinese dynasties. And so if you're a general, if you're a top leader who either is corrupt or who has indulged corruption in your networks, or you've not done enough to implement what Xi wants in terms of building a cleaner and a more capable system, then I think Xi is going to lose trust in you. I think he feels he had a reason to feel betrayed by Zhang Youxia. And he's
But why? That's the point, Neil. Like, I mean, in the first, they didn't even mention corruption in the initial sort of formal announcements. Unusually, that's usually the first thing that's mentioned. And we had these amazing statements like seriously trampling on or undermining the CMC chairman. I mean, this sounds more like a power struggle than a, to many people's ears, than a classic corruption probe.
It's a bit of both. I've read the PLA Daily editorial that you're quoting, and it does also mention corruption several times as one of the reasons that she launched this investigation into Zhang Youxia and his colleague, Liu Zhenli, who was also purged at the same time, another senior general. And I think the difficulty for us as analysts trying to work out what the hell's going on in the corridors of power, the very opaque corridors of power in Beijing, is that corruption is, you know, a criminal offense in China, but it's also now, you know, one of the gravest political sins. Being corrupt is a political offense. It's going against everything she is trying to do to rejuvenate the party and make it a more effective institution to stay in power and to make China great again. So I think there's absolutely the possibility that this is very political. Everyone who's come up through the PLA in the last few decades almost certainly has some actual corruption that you can pin on them if you want to.
Well, they buy their way into higher ranks. I mean, that's the thing. As I've read, there's sort of almost everybody is implicated, has got a bit of a skeleton in the closet.
And we 100% know that was what was happening before Xi, because that is how, you know, as public reports say, the CIA bought influence in Beijing. It basically paid for the bribes that military officers would use to advance through the system. So they benefited. They provided intelligence. The CIA benefited. So, like, we know that was happening. We don't know exactly how prevalent that is since Xi became leader. It has been part of the charge sheet against people who've been purged since. So it probably didn't go from 100% to 0% once Xi became leader, despite the anti-corruption campaign. But yeah, it's the case that there's a huge amount of corruption still in the PLA, the procurement bureaucracy, which is what Zhang Youxia led for the first 5 years of Xi's leadership, and which other people who've been taken down by recent corruption probes were heavily involved in, is a source of concern about graft, not just in China, but in militaries across the world. When you have companies, even if they're state-owned, competing for bids, there's a lot of incentive there to have money changing hands under the table.
Neil, there's a dimension to this which is also personal. This is a relationship that goes right back to childhood, as I read. Can you tell us a bit more about how these two men knew each other, what the depth and strength of the relationship has been? Because for me, that's what makes this moment even more extraordinary.
It is a great point. Zhang Youxia was seen as being someone who was closer to Xi's inner circle than some of the other people who have been purged in recent years. So Zhang Youxia and Xi Jinping, their fathers were comrades in arms in the Revolutionary War that the communists fought with the nationalists to, you know, gain power in the first place and establish the People's Republic in 1949. And both Xi and Zhang Jr. grew up in the elite circles of Beijing in the 50s and the 60s after the communists came to power. They're both princelings in the terminology of the Communist Party. And so they have that connection, being part of the red elite. They did, though, in their careers, once they kind of started working, work apart for several decades. I mean, Zhang was in the military. He was fighting in Vietnam. He was in all sorts of different provinces. Xi was going through the civilian bureaucracy as a local leader in very different places in China. So we know that they knew each other. And we know from the fact that Xi kept promoting Zhang Youxia over the last decade or so. Yeah, a special exception past the traditional retirement age, that he certainly trusted him, liked him, thought he would be a reliable ally. But we've actually never known exactly how close they are in terms of the personalities. Did they really like each other? Was it a personal friendship? we can't interview these people. So we don't know that type of information for sure, but certainly that trust had to be there for Xi to make those promotion decisions. And obviously something's changed since then, and there's been reason for that, cause for that trust to evaporate.
There's one detail about this whole moment that has niggled me a little bit. I think it is referred to in your Substack, actually, Neil. And it's the notion that it would have been quite easy for Xi to get rid of him quietly over the next kind of 12 to 18 months. That was the obvious trajectory. You could just kind of slightly remove them from view, which I think you were saying has already been the case, you know, at various events, like slightly out of frame. There were ways to do this that were subtle, and that's not at all what has happened. And to me, that's almost the tell. What is it for you?
To me, it's a sign that Xi wants to totally refresh the leadership of the People's Liberation Army. He had cause, whether it's corruption or political disloyalty or both, to punish Zhang Youxia, to remove him from his position of responsibility. And he wants to make it clear to the rest of the system that he will not tolerate any pushback or deviation from what he wants in the military. I mean, he needs a really credible, modern, loyal fighting force so he can put more pressure on Taiwan, he can deter the United States from being more involved in the Indo-Pacific, he can make allies like Australia think twice about how much we push back on China's activities in the South China Sea. And so the PLA is really important for China's foreign policy goals, for Xi's personal goals, for China's so-called national rejuvenation. And so anyone who stands in his way, he's not going to be sentimental towards them. I mean, he's so powerful that he can afford to dispose of some of these people if they're not doing exactly what he wants.
Neil, it is interesting. Drew Thompson, who was the in charge of the China desk at the US Defense Department, wrote a very interesting Substack too. We're all reading Substacks, so we're going out of our minds. And he really thought that General Zhang was an outstanding military leader. He is educated, intelligent, and intuitive, unlike, he virtually said, well, he did say, most of the PLA people whom we entertained in the US. He knew him well, chauffeured him around in 2012. He's exceptional among PLA generals. And he did finish this: without General Zhang Youxia at the CMC, the risk is of miscalculation goes up. Because the standard of a lot of the PLA officers, and like they basically, all the generals have gone, more or less. There's a real sort of vacuum at the top. The risk of miscalculation presenting to Xi Jinping goes up. Now, do you think that is a fair comment?
I think Drew's right. I mean, right now there's just a total empty set in terms of who's surrounding Xi to provide him with military advice. And that's obviously concerning. I think, though, if we look at Xi's track record, he really isn't someone who likes to gamble with China's future. He's all about incrementally building up power, pushing the limits, and, you know, aggressively advancing China's interests, but doing so in a way that falls short of a threshold that might lead into war or conflict. We saw, for example, at the China-India border clashes in 2020. We don't know exactly how they started, but they happened. People died on both sides. But the reaction from Xi Jinping was not to keep pushing harder and harder and let's go, let's see what we can get. Let's bring it on to the Indians across the border and make some progress here. It was like, oh wait, this has gone further than we want. We're going to pull back. We're going to have round after round of negotiations. We're going to try and, you know, push our interests, but not do so in a way that causes a crisis, but maybe brings in other countries like the US to this conflict. So I don't think, even if Xi was given total free rein, had no generals around to advise him, that he would, you know, automatically invade Taiwan. I don't think that's part of his plan. He's smarter than that, quite frankly, in terms of building up China's influence and trying to do it in a way that's easier and less costly, and it doesn't involve a massive war. But in terms of what comes next, Drew's totally right. We don't know what the next generation of PLA leadership is going to be like.
So, I mean, arguably it makes them quite vulnerable. That's what it would seem to me that there's loads of question marks hanging over the PLA at the moment. They might be modernising, but they've got no men of knowledge sitting at the top. I mean, why would he want that?
I think they have men of knowledge, your people of knowledge, who have more modern and up-to-date experience than Zhang Youxia, whose combat experience was in the 70s and 80s, a very different type of warfare than what would be applicable to Taiwan and the South China Sea right now. What she doesn't have at the moment is generals with experience, people who are true and tested leaders at the highest level, who've worked together with a leadership team to execute really complex joint operations that involve not just the army, but the Navy, the Air Force, the Rocket Force, other brigades. And that's what will take some time to develop.
If I can chime in, I reckon what Geraldine is nudging at here, and forgive me if I'm wrong, Jerry, is really a question about who she has sitting around the table with him if and when they make a decision to do something in Taiwan. Are there equals at that table, or are there just people that are going to do what she tells him?
That's the big difference now with Zhang Youxia gone. I think Zhang Youxia was not a peer of Xi Jinping. She was by far the more powerful figure in Chinese politics, but he was a very experienced general. He's someone who she knew personally, and someone of the same cohort, right? He was slightly older than she. And the next generation of leaders that she will appoint in the coming months and years to replace all those that have been purged, that new cadre of generals is going to be much younger. They're not going to have the same background. They're not going to share the same formative experience as she. And they're likely to be much more, personally dependent on Xi's favor for their position. I mean, Zhang Youxia obviously became a general actually before she came to power in 2012. He became a general the year before. So it gave him a little bit of credibility beyond just Xi's leadership. But these new people, it's the Xi Jinping show. And it doesn't mean there won't be discussion and there can't be some level of artful pushback by talented people in the system. But it certainly makes it a lot more difficult, and certainly it's likely to reduce the quality of the conversation.
Now, Neil, I don't want to be trivial, but you are by far our best dressed guest this year. you're appearing down the line from us in black tie because you've just left Kevin Rudd's, farewell gala party in Washington?
It's his last gala. He said it wasn't his farewell address when he was at the podium. So I'm sure there's some other occasions that he'll be appearing at before he leaves.
Did you have a chance to ask him about China? Because, of course, he knows a lot about China.
There's hundreds and hundreds of people there, so I didn't have a chance to have an in-depth conversation with him.
And it wouldn't have been quick anyway, even if you had.
Neil Thomas, thank you very much. We'll let you get to bed. It's very late there.
Thanks for having me.
So, Geraldine, are you now convinced that this is a sign of Xi's ironclad grip on power in China or not?
No, I'm not, despite Neil's very eloquent evocation of all the reasons why. I would have thought that there is at least a way of seeing it as that it's that maybe in the shorter term, that it actually exposes him quite a lot, that he's right out on his own, really on his own. I mean, he might like that. No, I personally think that nobody, I think Stalin learned this too years ago, you basically take more and more authority to yourself, even if you're doing it because you believe that you're sort of cleansing the place. I think it exposes you, and I think he's got to be confident of that PLA, and I don't know how he can be.
Is the other side of this coin, though, Geraldine, that the criticism we often hear of the Chinese system is that it's not regenerative? it doesn't have those automatic processes that cleanse or whatever term you want to use, and that he's taking personal responsibility for doing that. Is there another dimension to this, which is, okay, we're seriously thinking about what we're going to do vis-a-vis Taiwan, and I want to make sure that I have the best people in place and someone that fought, did service in the 70s and 80s is not the person to be commanding or leading the decision-making processes around a very contemporary form of conflict that might be involved in Taiwan?
He could be doing that. You could be right. It's just that once you start to read about the PLA, now, admittedly, you know, you read about it from American sources, etc., they basically say they're not especially impressive. They can tool up well, but their judgment and their maturity is not great.
But if you think about the types of conflict we might be discussing in terms of Taiwan, you know, visiting there last year, filming, the discussion was not about necessarily the boats and the aircraft and, you know, landing and taking the territory that way. There's a lot more discussion of grey zone conflict and the penetration of the information systems and the domestic political system in Taiwan. And so is a man of this age and ilk and experience at the top of the decision-making pile in the PLA necessarily of use to Xi Jinping?
Look, to be fair, it's also true that Xi Jinping asked the PLA to essentially tell him by 2027 whether they would be capable of military action. So he has put it on them as well. I've always felt that it would be a slower process. You know, they say China's got a lot of patience. But I think the thing for Xi is this man, General Zhang, was apparently very sobered by the effect of war, which he'd seen. Now, you might say it's a different type of war, but he needs to be sure that there aren't a bunch of political lackeys basically giving him the answer that he wants, because that is, when you start looking at it, the PLA is the military arm of the Communist Party, not China. So it is populated with a lot of politicos. Quite important.
Oh, I know. This is all getting very human, though.
What do you mean?
Well, in a moment of tension, do you want to be sat at a table with people that agree with you or the ones that disagree? You know, this is the human dimension.
Oh, but that's right. But you want, if you're about to invade something, you'd like to have somebody who's got the guts to say to you, excuse me, Mr. Xi, unwise. Now, if he can't rely on that, I don't know why he's putting himself through that, but you know what? I'll just quietly sit here and watch from little old democratic Australia.
Shall we do some recommendations, Geraldine?
Yes. Look, let's recommend another film from me. It was just an accident. Now, it's just in the cinemas, I think, this week. It's a film about Iran. It's made by a very interesting and brave filmmaker called Jafar Panahi. He spent 3 years in the notorious Evin prison listening to the stories of fellow prisoners from which he's made this film, imagining life in post-regime Iran. And how do you live beside the person you realise was your torturer? It's populated my mind, shall we say, and I thoroughly do recommend it with that caveat.
Okay, well, I'm going to recommend a documentary as well. You can find it on ABC iView. It is called But Also John Clark, of course,
yes.
From Clark and Door. It's a beautiful film. It's made actually by his daughter, Lorraine Clark. It explores his life, his beginnings in New Zealand, the trajectory of his career, how he ended up on Australian television. It's a beautiful tribute to a man whose face and voice and style I think we all admire and have enjoyed and appreciated over many years. I really enjoyed it. And if you want something that takes you completely away from the troubles of the world, it's well worth it. Thanks to our producers, Shane Anderson and Kylie Morris. We'll be back with more on Monday, answering some of your burning questions. So for now, Geraldine, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Hamish.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.